Hello and welcome to another edition of The Tigers Down Under. I'm your host as always, Alex, and with me I have Logan.
Good evening, everyone.
And I also have Dan.
Hey.
We haven't had a game this past weekend, which is why we didn't record an episode last week, but we'll be discussing the poor result against Arsenal, the 2-0 defeat at the Emirates, before we look ahead to our upcoming game against Burnley, and we'll also throw in some discussion about the training camp the players have been on, as well as looking at another player this week after our first player last week that we discussed in David Myler. But we'll get started with that Arsenal result, and it was disappointing all round. However, the boys did look pretty good, and Grzycki and Markovic, I thought, on the wings looked absolutely terrific and really terrorised that Arsenal defence a couple of times. I'll start with you, Dan. We'll look at the positives first. Obviously, there's a lot of controversial moments to discuss as well, but what did you take out of the match from a positive point of view?
It was good to see the way we played. We really took it to Arsenal, and that was good to see. We made a few clear-cut chances that, I mean, Nias is, if he's in a slightly different position, you know, a foot either side, he might put him away. There was one he only needed to take the chance and make a run towards the goal line in the empty space, and we're 1-0 up. But overall, I thought, yeah, the play was really good. It was a bit scrappy throughout the first half, but we did settle into it in the second half and really pushed Arsenal and had them scrambling a fair bit as well.
Obviously, great signs to go to the Emirates and play like that. What did you take out of it, Logan?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to take out of it was, I think Tom Huddleston, it was, in his post-match conference, actually went on to say how the disappointment feel around the camp after coming away from the Emirates and losing. It kind of says a lot about where we've come from. To go to a place as big as the Emirates and to come away genuinely feeling aggrieved that we didn't take anything from the game, I think just shows the turnaround in the way the players' attitudes are towards every match that they come into contention with. I guess probably the biggest complaint under management of Steve Bruce was we never really found ourselves on the positive side of those big games because we almost took a losing mentality into it. And I think that from Huddleston's comments, it seems like there is a sense of belief in the camp that we can kind of go anywhere and take results.
Yeah, and as much as it was disappointing to lose the game, it was almost good in the sense that it was disappointing. It was disappointing in the sense that we thought we could actually get something out of it, and the way we played, we could have got something out of it. Whereas, you know, only a couple of months ago, we'd have been happy just to lose by less than 2 goals or 3 goals. So it was good to be able to go into the match expecting to get a result. And even though we didn't get one, I guess it isn't the end of the world. And we've now picked up 4 points from 4 games where we probably would have expected to get none. But there were obviously a few controversial moments in the game which led to Arsenal's opener, as the incident we'll start with discussing, before obviously there were two red card incidents, you could say, where the referee perhaps made the wrong decision, which we'll talk about in a second. But I'll start with the opening goal for Arsenal, which was the Sanchez goal, where the ball does go in off his hand, and referees have sort of discussed this, and there does seem to be this interesting interpretation from the referees where they say, well, technically it's not a handball, but because it's a goal that's decided by the player's hand, it shouldn't be given. Logan, what's your take on it, whether it was actually a handball, whether it wasn't, whether the goal should have stood?
I think there's no way that the goal can stand when the last point of contact is off the attacking player's hand. I think that is where the kind of contentious idea that ball to hand, handball exists. But in an attacking position, I just can't fathom how something like that can be even plausible, knowing the kind of the ramifications that a goal has in a game. It just shouldn't be allowed. And I think that there was obviously kind of national uproar. The game got a lot of media because of the nature of it. And Clattenburg was slated to the point where he obviously, from all reports, even went and apologised to the City players at half-time, which kind of shows that I think the error in judgment from him that he accepted.
And how about you, Dan? What was your take on the incident?
I thought it was clear-cut handball from my perspective. I think the only thing, obviously the refs couldn't get a clear view on it. Otherwise, you couldn't see anywhere. They couldn't call it with... the calls have come, you know, ball to hand, hand to ball, all the different issues with officiating handballs, but like when you consider, like, yes, he's gone in and it's ricocheted up, but he's got his hand above his head. That's like 2 meters that the ball's traveled before it's hit his hand and gone into the goal. Like, it hasn't. It's not like it was out but by his side, and it's only like it's quickly flicked up. Like, it's a fair distance that it's traveled before it's gone in off. The other thing that I think, you know, this sort of incident sort of highlights that and brings to the forefront again the talk about bringing in video review and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, whether you, as a captain of your team, you know, like, you know, I think it's in cricket or whatever, you can have three appeals or three reviews, you know, or whatever in the game or something. And you know, in that situation, you can go, you know, Huddleston can go up and say, you've got to watch this. Like, that's a handball, and they go away and they, sure, it slows the game down, but they have a look and they get the decision right at the end of the day. And I think that's something that, I mean, they are looking at it, and it's supposed to be trialed in the MLS, I think, for in the next preseason or something. But yeah, it's a tough one. Like, I do feel for referees at times like this when those, like, I don't know. It's a hard one.
I guess the counterpoint on that one would be that it's been a week and we're still debating it. So whether the officials could get it right watching the video replay is another issue. But I think you're spot on there in terms of if he'd had his hands out by his side, you think, okay, well, fair enough, that's him in his motion for running and stretching for the ball. But to have your hand above your head straight up in the air, I think it raises also the interesting point about attackers versus defenders and how you call a handball. I think when it's a defender, they seem, funnily enough, they seem much more willing to give the handball decision, even though that seems to have a much more significant impact on the game, obviously because it leads to a penalty and perhaps a goal. Whereas when it's the attacker who might handle the ball accidentally or have his hand out from his side or something like that, they seem much more reluctant to actually pay the handball decision against the attacking players, which, I mean, in my mind at least, is sort of the opposite of what you'd expect, because you would expect the referees to sort of bottle the more important decisions that would have the larger impact on the game. But as we saw later in the match, whilst I don't think you can deny that Klukas does, you know, lean his arm towards the ball and therefore deserves to be sent off, it seems a much more clear-cut decision and the referee does pay it. So it's an interesting one in terms of how they perceive these incidents and when they're more willing to pay the handball. I mean, I remember there was the El Mohammedi at Tottenham a couple of years back where the ball flicks up off his boot, hits his hand, which is by his side, and they pay the handball for that, which, when you consider, you know, comparing it to Sanchez, the ball flicks up off Jakubovic, but in this incident, Sanchez has his hand above his head, so it's even further away from the ball than El Mohammedi's, and in a more unnatural position, etc. But they don't pay it for Sanchez, they do pay it for El Mohammedi when El Mohammedi's the defender, and it leads to a penalty, and we lose the game. So it's a bit interesting how they perceive these sorts of incidents, and I think they probably need to clarify the rules a little bit around those. But one incident that I don't think needs any clarification from the rules, but would certainly like a clarification from Clattenburg and the FA, was the last-ditch challenge on Markovic from Gibbs, which certainly seemed to be a red card and quite a blatant one at that. Two aspects of this. First of all, the incident itself, and then also the fact that we drew an FA charge for misconduct for asking Clattenburg why it wasn't a red. So I'll start with you, Logan, because I know you had a bit of an opinion on this one.
It's disgraceful. I think that Clattenburg, having already known what had happened previously in the first half and being in to apologise, probably had some kind of guilt or somewhat shame in the sense that he knew he was having a stinker. The fact that it has been compounded on top of that with the horrible handling of the Markovic decision, which, by the way, in real time, I didn't think there was all too much grounds to warrant the red until I saw the replay. And the more times I watched the replay, the more disgusted I became at just how remarkable it was that Gibbs was able to stay on the field.
Compounded that. I think that the assistant ref at least would be able to have a good perspective of that.
It was so clear-cut that it really defies logic that they could arrive at the decision without, as you mentioned, without the assistant ref even being able to offer some form of advice. Everybody seems to have an opinion on it, none more than Jeff Stelling as well, who was quite enjoyable to watch, actually, with his response towards the incident. But as you mentioned, I thought the City players were well within their right to kind of ask the question of Clatterburg, regardless of the nature of how they did it, given the magnitude of the situation in context of the game. Markovic pulls through on goal and scores. You've and Arsenal potentially down to 10 men, perhaps, is the other alternative. You're looking at a totally different match. So it was very disappointing to see the fact that it was then compounded with a charge from the FA. Made things even worse, particularly when some City fans will feel extremely aggrieved having watched the replay of the penalty decision awarded when Tom Huddleston scored in the second leg of the League Cup against United. In the manner that the United players gathered around the referee, looked from viewing it to be the exact same thing, potentially even worse, and nothing was kind of mentioned. So, look, I think poorly handled all round by the officials, and then for the FA to chime in just made things even worse. I think City fans are well within their right to feel aggrieved of the entire events that surrounded the Arsenal fixture.
Absolutely, and I hope that the next time that we get a contentious decision in our favour and the opposition surrounds the ref, I would certainly hope that the club will be sending that footage to the FA and demanding that there be some sort of action taken against the opposition in that instance, because it's been incredibly inconsistently paid this season. I don't think I've seen many other charges apart from Chelsea, who I think have a bad record with it anyway. But there certainly doesn't seem to be much consistency in terms of doling out those sorts of fines. And as you say, compounded with the poor decision, just really rubs salt in the wound. Dan, I'll get your opinion on that incident as well, but also bring into it the Walcott incident, where there are a few different incidents within one passage of play that really could have accumulated into a red card, whether it was the throwing the ball at the linesman, going head-to-head with Maguire, or then having a few stern words with the ref himself. Each of those in isolation, I reckon, could have been a yellow card, and certainly altogether would probably almost warrant a red.
Yeah, on Gibbs's tackle on Markovic, well, it wasn't a tackle. He didn't look at the ball. He took Markovic out.
Yeah.
He was not trying to make a tackle at all. He just was stopping the man. In contrast to Sanchez's handball and with like potential that refs didn't have clear line of sight, those two players were well away from everything. If the linesman could not see that, he needs to go to the optometrist. and Clattenburg should have been in a position to see that. And even if he couldn't see, like, if there was some part of that being blocked, it was still pretty clear what had happened. You know, Gibbs didn't get the ball. Markovic went down after Gibbs came across, like, put two and two together. I don't really want to go too much further into that. On the fines, though, yes, so as Logan said, like it's pretty disgraceful, and you see it every week. Like every time there's any sort of a red card or a penalty or some sort of game-changing decision, captain and all the players around it, they rush the referee. And I agree with the FA that is not a good image. It's not what you want to promote to the public, but you've got to be consistent if you're going to enforce that. And that's the biggest thing. On Walcott and all that. Oh, geez. I don't know how you can... So I've seen people kick the ball away in frustration and get given a yellow card. And that's just at no one. I've never seen anyone direct anything remotely violent towards a referee and not being sent off. On top of the descent and trying to go at Maguire, like it's, as you said, Alex, like the accumulation of all those three things bunched together, I'm honestly pretty surprised that Walcott lasted the 90 as well.
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's a few incidents there that have all kind of accumulated into a pretty sour taste in the mouth towards Clattenburg, who traditionally, in fairness, has actually been quite a good ref towards us. When I saw that he was reffing the game, I was quite happy because I have memories of, I think it's the United game at our place back in 2014 or 2013, and he was quite good with calling United players out on a few dives and not really taking much stick from them. And he's usually pretty good at sticking up for the smaller clubs against the big clubs in those sorts of situations. So I was pretty surprised at how he behaved or how he reffed the game against Arsenal. And he seems he's fled the country. He's off to I think he's off to the United Emirates or he's off to Saudi Arabia or somewhere like that. I've forgotten the exact country in the Middle East where he's now off to ref on £1 million a year wage, I think it is. So good luck to him over there, I suppose. But it's an interesting career choice. 1 week after a pretty big Premier League game. On the game itself, we'll just finish off with the actual game itself, and I'll get from both of you. You're probably the top three players of the match, just so we can finish off rounding this out with a bit of a positive chat. So, Logan, who do you reckon would be your top three players in the match?
I think without a doubt, Markovic was probably the best on the pitch, by quite some margin. He was outstanding, and particularly when you kind of had that feel when he first came in, was he going to put in a shift or is he going to be that Diarmi type player who kind of goes missing and then shows up with the moments of brilliance? I thought he was exceptional. Huddleston continues to kind of defy the odds. The form that he's in at the moment is just incredible for us. And it really, it's the true Tom Huddleston that we've kind of wanted to see for years and has kind of been the main reason that he hasn't been selected for England because of the consistency, arguably. He's just in the form of his career, and he's fantastic to watch. And I also thought that, those two were the ones that stood out, but I also thought Krasicki was also quite a standout as well.
Dan, did you have any players to add to those three?
Well, I would have said Markovic as well. He was just, yeah, he was head and shoulders, like, best player on the pitch, in my opinion. I thought Krasicki was good, but I did think he was a little bit in and out of the game at times. Huddleston, actually, I thought it was one of his poorer performances in the over the last month, but I think that just shows how much we've come to expect from him, how much his stature has grown, and how much he's showing. But I thought the two centre backs both had pretty strong games, and I wouldn't be amiss in putting their names forward, I don't think.
I mean, I agree on the point that Grzycki faded in and out of the game. I mean, to a lesser extent, so did Markovic, but he was certainly much more consistent in his application. But probably the highlight of the game for me just about was Grzycki's outside of the foot cross into the box onto Nias's head. Where if I think it was our first big chance, where if Nias had actually directed the ball back across goal, it was a certain goal, and it was just a brilliant passage of play to watch. And yeah, hopefully as Grzycki and Markovic get their fitness levels up, because we have to remember, I mean, they've both been in and out of their former clubs' teams, so their match fitness would be only now coming up to 100%. So hopefully as they get better match fitness, that'll help them stay more consistently in the games. And that's probably a good segue to talk about our Portuguese training camp, which the players have been on for the last 7 days, give or take. There hasn't been a whole lot of press out of the training camp, so everything we sort of say here is just going to be speculation. But I'll get thoughts from you first, Dan, on how on the significance you place on this training camp, whether you think it's going to have a strong positive impact on our season, finishing it off, whether you think having this break without a game for a week is sort of disruptive, or if you think it's really good to get away with Silva and kind of implement his tactics.
I think if they come out in the next couple of weeks and pick up results, this training camp will be a masterstroke. Because so they've had a big run of fixtures and they've brought in a bunch of new players and they've somehow managed to get a few points that no one really expected. But in saying, like, there were seven new players to the squad, and they've now played two or three games together, and they've only been in the club for 2 weeks. Like, it's a good opportunity to take them away from the KCOM, away from and all the English media and everything, and just get away, you know, get to know each other, get back to working on the structure and how they want to play, how each player plays and how the players around them play. I honestly think it's a good thing. I think it's good. They'll go away and some of those guys who are lacking the bit of match fitness, they've got a week off to work really hard and try and pick up a little bit. I mean, as you said, like, we don't really know much about it, so it's hard to say. But I think, like, from what I imagine they would be doing over there, it would be a lot of team bonding sort of stuff. They'd be getting to know everyone would be getting to know each other a lot more, so they can continue to build from the foundations that they've already laid.
Yeah, I think I saw Renocci put out a tweet the other day, incidentally on his birthday, saying that they'd been doing double sessions. So it sounds like they're getting pumped pretty hard, but I certainly hope that they're also getting a bit of rest and recovery in, because the last thing we'd want really would be the players getting pumped hard and not really getting any sort of recovery and then coming back and hitting the ground running in games and tiring themselves out. But Logan, we've seen FA Cup mixed results over the last few days for our relegation rivals. I mean, Leicester getting knocked out by Millwall was certainly encouraging to see in terms of their morale taking further hits. We also saw Burnley losing to Lincoln City, which, funnily enough, I saw it pointed out, I think, by Rick, that Burnley were playing Lincoln. Lincoln have North Ferriby next, whereas Burnley play us. So it's a bit interesting to see the gulf in talent in that perspective. And then Middlesbrough only just creeped past, I think it was Oxford, 3-2. So it's almost a blessing in disguise that we've been knocked out of the FA Cup and we've had this chance to go away.
Yeah, in many degrees it is. But I also think that complacency is a huge issue. If we are to look at the Premier League table, we'll still find ourselves sitting in 18th position. And whilst there does seem to be a renewed attitude under Silva and a renewed kind of sense of confidence amongst the players and the fans, I still think that until we're mathematically safe, there is a very obvious job to do. And I think that nobody's under any illusion as to, you know, to just how large a task that still is. So whilst it is kind of nice to see Burnley and Leicester and Borough all kind of falling by the wayside and struggling to get their own results, I think that different competition, it's very hard to read too much into all of that. And it is, I think, a great time for the training camp to come along. And for Marco Silva, I think, would be relishing the opportunity to have that break and to have that time away from what has been an incredibly silly season since he first signed with the club.
Yes, it'll be interesting to see how the boys recover and play against Burnley. It's interesting to note that when we were in a relegation battle two seasons ago under Steve Bruce, that he actually went on a holiday when we had a similar gap in our season due to the FA Cup. So it's interesting to see the contrasting tactics of the two managers and how they're dealing with the relegation battle that we're in. So hopefully it pays off, and hopefully come the end of the season we've seen the dividends of this trip. But We'll move on then and talk about this next game that we've got coming up against Burnley. So last season when we played them at home, we did it just after Christmas, and talking about having these training sessions, we had the day off on Christmas Day for the players, whereas Burnley trained on Christmas Day. And I remember there was a bit of sense of unease that perhaps they would be more up for the game, they'd be more prepared. And yet we won 3-0. So it comes back to this sort of discussion of, you know, differing tactics can work sometimes, different strokes for different folks, that sort of thing. But I'll start with you, Dan. Obviously, Burnley have been have quite a good record against us, have the wood over us in many aspects over the seasons, especially in the Premier League. But how do you see this one panning out at home?
Look, I think this game is now, given the result that they had in the FA Cup, now becomes a real danger game, because they're going to come out with a point to prove. Like, it's a pretty shocking and a bit embarrassing for their players, and, you know, some of the stuff, you know, what Joey Barton and all his antics and whatnot. So, like, they're going to come out with a point to prove, and it's a game that we have to win. There's no, you know, ifs, and, like, we have to win this game. It's going to be a tough one, but I think we can do it. If we play the way that we have been playing, we play the way we, like, we perform how we attack the way we attacked Arsenal, if we attack Burnley like that, I can't see any result other than us walking away with the 3 points.
Particularly, I mean, Burnley have such an awful record away from home. I think they've only picked up 1 point all season. Logan, how do you see this one unfolding? And obviously we've got a suspension to deal with in the form of Klukas. Do you think it's basically just a straight swap for someone like Evandro, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it will be a straight swap. I think Evandro will come straight into the team. As you mentioned, they have been somewhat of a banana skin for us in recent times. But looking at the league table at the moment, it's quite a strange position that Burnley would be chuffed to be sitting in 12th position and relatively safe. I don't think that Burnley fans or the Burnley staff would even consider themselves in a relegation battle. And I think that they will avoid it quite comfortably. Obviously, the factor that concerns me the most is the fact that there's Robbie Brady and George Boyd may feature for them as well. So, bearing in mind that in recent times, anyone who's played for City who plays against City tends to score against us. So I think that's something worth being wary of. But to be perfectly honest, I've got very high hopes for this game. And I think that on the back of the Portugal training camp, I think we'll be fresh and I think we'll be up for it. And I think it will be a game that we will do quite comfortably.
Do you think, you've touched on there that Burnley supporters wouldn't think of themselves as being in a relegation battle, do you think that will play into our hands a little bit? Do you think Burnley might go into the game a bit complacent?
I don't think that any Sean Dyche-led team will ever head into a game too complacent. I think that, to be fair, I watched the match where Lincoln played them, and I thought Lincoln were fantastic. I don't think Burnley were all that poor. They obviously lack the quality in the final third. But everyone kind of has those days, particularly in those tricky cup ties when you're playing against teams that you don't know all too much about. So I think that Burnley won't be complacent by any stretch of the imagination, and they will be difficult. But I just think that the feeling around the KCOM at the moment is one that kind of just demands us to go out and really stick it to them.
But one player who might be key in any chance of victory in this one is Tom Huddleston, who is our player of the week that we're going to discuss now, just before we sign off. And I wanted to get both your thoughts on him. He's obviously been quite a star in our midfield since he joined the club back in 2013 for, at the time, a club record fee, which, funnily enough, I suspect was just higher than the fee we paid for Jimmy Bullard quite intentionally to get Bullard off the top of the list. If I said to you guys, if we did a bit of an over-under here just to see your perception of how many games he's played for us, if I said the number 150, do you reckon he's played more games in all competitions? If I said 150, would you reckon he's played more games than that for us or less games than that?
I'm going to say just under.
Yeah, I would say under as well.
He's played just over. He's played 152 games for us in all competitions, which is quite incredible when you think that's a fair few games of football, and it makes you realise how long he's actually been around the club. But I think in all that time, he's scored just the 5 goals. I think there's the one against Sheffield United in the FA Cup semi-final sticks out the most, obviously, other than that Fulham goal. But I'll get from both of you your thoughts on him. I mean, Logan, what would you say is the highlight of his time at City?
I think that goal against Sheffield United, in the cup semi at Wembley was probably my most memorable Tom Huddleston individual brilliance moment, because he is kind of one of those unassuming players that he isn't known for scoring too many spectacular goals, although he does have a few to his name, particularly in his time at Tottenham. But what Tom Huddleston does, and I remember vividly when we first got promoted when he was in the team, is there was a very common theory going around that if you shut Tom Huddleston down, you shut Hull down. And I think that for kind of national media to be picking up those kind of things, it's people who are watching the game in the know seem to rate him very highly to our setup and how we seem to play, and he dictated terms. So I think it's undoubted that his passing ability is perhaps the best, or one of the best, if not the best, that we would have been privileged to have in the City ranks, potentially of all time. So I think that kind of sums up Tom Huddleston, and he really does play a massive part in the way we go about business. If Tom Huddleston does play well, we usually have good games.
And how about you, Dan? What's your fondest memory of him, or highlight, I suppose, of his time at City so far?
You mentioned the Fulham goal, and I can picture the whole thing, and I've running over to the sideline to get his hair clipped so they could do the charity thing, and all the it was such a good moment. Like, I mean, it was a bit more of like a personal moment for him than for anything that was great for the club, because I think we, what was it, 6-1 or something that game?
6-0, yeah.
Something. But that's probably still one of my favourite Huddleston moments. Look, he's a great player. He's, as Logan's pointed out, like, his passing is second to none. Like, not only in just our team, I think within the Premier League, like, he's got to be up there in the best natural passes of the ball.
Yeah.
And as like Logan was saying, that the media was saying that to shut Tom Huddleston down is the way to go about shutting City down. Well, I think that is often a harder task, like, on paper than it is in reality. He is, like, he's a big man, and he's not that mobile, but he has some footwork, and he can work his way out of a tight space, as we've seen the last few weeks, like, just in the box and pulls a turn and just that you wouldn't expect a player to make in those situations. But he has great awareness, and
yeah, his vision's just tremendous. I mean, he'll spot a player for a pass, you know, half the ground away that you wouldn't even think of as an option, and his pass just opens the game up entirely.
Yeah, I think the other thing that... I think he was really unlucky, and I think to not be playing for a lot of the season. I should finish that point before I continue. I think that with Huddleston, I think for some reason it's this... I don't know what it is in football, but there's this weird thing that if you don't have natural pace, people assume that you aren't fit. And that is what Huddleston has suffered for a lot of his time at City. Whenever he's been out of the side, he's been accused of not being fit. And he didn't play that much this season. And Marco Silva came in and he put him on and he played 90 minutes almost every, like, just week after game after game after game. And you go, well, he's obviously not unfit. So it's just this thing where they go, oh, he's not mobile enough, or he's not fit enough or this. But he's smart. He's so smart. He's such an intelligent player that he's built his career regardless of that fact.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a great point. And we touched on it slightly earlier. I think he's only got a handful of caps to his name for England. And I think after that Fulham game, there was a lot of talk and a lot of pressure to put him back into the England squad, which failed to materialise at the time. Do you think it's sort of passed him by now, the opportunity to get back into the England team? I mean, he's almost... he's 30. He's only just turned 30, I suppose. So he's sort of... I wouldn't say nearing the end of his career by any stretch, but he's certainly in the latter stages of it. He's, you know, he's closer to the end than he is the start. Logan, do you think there's any chance he could make his way back into the England side?
Look, I think that it's always a possibility, particularly with the form that he's in at the moment. Anyone who watches Tom Huddleston play week in, week out, if he's able to continually repeat these performances and play in the consistent manner that all City fans hope that he does, then anything is possible. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was to force his way back into the squad, perhaps even if he obviously wasn't to start. But he definitely may have a role to play in national or international games just yet. But I think that a testament to his new lease of life under Silva, he just looks like he's a renewed player. So to write him off would be to our detriment. I think that there's a lot more to give, and I wouldn't be too surprised to see it if it did happen a little bit down the track.
And how about you, Dan? Do you reckon there's a chance it could happen?
There's always a chance, as you say. But I mean, I couldn't even tell you who the incumbent centre mids are in the England squad lineup at the moment, but.
He'd basically be fighting with Henderson, I reckon. I mean, I'm usually quite bad at comparing player to player specific roles, but I would say that Henderson's the one in that team who's there for his range of passing, and I think that would be the sort of the player that he'd have to dislodge.
Yeah, well, I mean, Henderson's not a bad player, so, but no, I mean, it's entirely possible that Huddleston could force his way in. Yes, he's a little bit older, and it's been a little while since his last cap, but I mean, all it takes is an injury or, you know, anything, really, and then you know, they're looking for another centre mid, and you go, well, who are the form centre mids in the competition at the moment? Who are the form English centre mids? Huddleston stands out pretty well.
As a final question on Huddleston, before I get tips for the game against Burnley, one final question. I'll start with you on this one, Dan. Admittedly, we're all three of us quite young, so we don't have a huge amount of comparisons for this question, but would you say that Huddleston is the best mid that City has ever seen?
From what I've... the few years that I've been following the team and the club, he has some of the best attributes that you would want in a midfielder. But it's hard to say, like, it's a very tough question to say, is he the best midfielder? Because, like, you can't really compare, like, him to, like, to comparing him to Shaun Maloney, it just, as two players from the squad, they have completely different roles within the midfield. So it's tough. But, I mean, he'd have to be up there as one of the best, like, high quality midfield players that we have had.
Yeah, so perhaps that's a better way to phrase it, is in terms of his technical ability. Logan, what's your take on it?
I agree. I think that Tom Huddleston is certainly up there. I think the only one in recent times that I'm going to say something very controversial and extremely unpopular.
The player I mentioned earlier, I suspect.
Yeah, the only person that I could rival him with, as far as of what we've seen in potentially the last sort of 10 to 12 years, is Jimmy Bullard. He's the only person I think that you would put in the same kind of range as Huddleston for technical ability. And don't get me started on the rest of Jimmy Bullard's downfalls. I would much rather have Tom Huddleston in my squad than Jimmy Bullard. But if the question is as it stands, then I think that his name would have to be mentioned, which is somewhat like talking about Lord Voldemort and Harry Potter these days around the city faithful.
Yeah. Well, I'll wrap things up then and get tips from both of you for the game. And I'll start with you, Logan.
I think City are going to do this one quite comfortable. And I wouldn't be surprised to see if it's a repeat of the odd 3-0.
And Dan?
I reckon just a nice clean 2-0 clean sheet.
Well, I'll go slightly less than both of you because I reckon with Burnley it's always a pretty typical 1-0 sort of affair, but I still reckon we'll edge it, so I'll go with 1-0 to City. So hopefully we can get the result on the weekend. It sounds like we're all pretty positive, which is always a nice change of things from a few months ago when it was all doom and gloom. But thank you for coming on, Logan.
Not a problem.
And thanks for coming on, Dan.
No worries, mate.
Thanks, everyone else, for listening in. We'll be back this time next week to review the Burnley game and to look ahead to next week's game. But until then, come on, City! You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast. For more discussion, join us on Facebook in the Hull City AFC Australian Supporters Group or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black. There's no turning back 'cause you're out.